The third case of the morning is number 014314, Robert Muzikowski against Paramount Pictures Incorporated. Mr. Muzikowski, I suppose we give the folks a moment to clear their way here, okay? Okay, sir, you may continue.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, I'm Bob Muzikowski, president of the New West Little League. I'm pro se, representing myself in the league. I'm also a volunteer for the last 12 years in the largest inner-city Little League in the United States. Since this is a de novo review, I'll begin with the foundation. So in about 1993, a book was written called Hardball by Daniel Coyle. And I'm mentioned in the book jacket. I'm mentioned in this book more times by first and last name more than anyone else in the book, so I'm not a casual character in this book. In the book, Dan gave intimate, numerous, and unique details of my life, including a bar fight where I was drunk, got in a bar fight, got a serious cut on my hand, was arrested and bailed out. I also spoke to a priest, and this night ultimately led to my finding what appellees refer to as redemption or sobriety. I'm an active AA guy for many years. The film, I got a dozen phone calls in 2000 from people all over the country saying, hey, Bob, they're making your movie. And they faxed me articles saying they're making a movie about the Little League in Chicago that I'm involved in.
These were friends of yours or clients?
Clients, numerous people. The film opens the same way as a short biography in the book, with that pivotal night in my life. Keanu Reeves is he's drunk in a bar fight in Duffy's Tavern. Incidentally, I grew up and lived next to a bar called Duffy's Tavern for 15 years growing up. He gets in a bar fight, cuts his hand, wears this bandage on his hand for the first, I have a pretty big scar in my hand, for the first few scenes of the movie. He goes to jail, gets bailed out, talks to a priest. After that, he becomes a coach in the Little League. This is not an average Little League. It's a unique Little League, sponsored by corporations and people downtown, mostly in the securities industry, my industry. And the teams are named after African tribes. There are no other Little Leagues like this. The movie is filmed in my neighborhood. A lot of the scenes are at St. Malachy's on Oakley and Washington. I live on Oakley and Polk. Many of the players actually attend St. Malachy's. There's 800 bad neighborhoods in this country, Judge, and another 100 in Chicago, but they filmed this one in the geographic boundaries of our Little League. Producer-director Brian Robbins said he wanted to shoot in the real place. Diane Lane said, I took this role because it's based on a true story. I'm defamed throughout, and so is the league.
Mr. Muzikowski, I wonder if I could, time is often very short here, jump ahead and ask you a couple of more technical questions. At the time you began this lawsuit, certainly from reading the pleadings, it appears that your principal goal was to prevent the movie from being released. Then, you know, that effort failed. The movie was, in fact, released. And by the time the suit was dismissed, there were two different theories. There was the defamation per se theory and the defamation per quad theory. And Judge Koukouras dismissed your defamation per quad theory without prejudice. He didn't think you'd pleaded special damages enough. And obviously, before the movie had been released at that time, you know, the things that were going to happen hadn't happened yet. And I'm wondering whether you ever considered or thought you had an opportunity to plead these special damages, because you've gone into a great deal of detail in your briefs about what kinds of harms you foresee from this movie. But there was no, or at least the district court judge thought that you had not spelled this out in the requisite detail for for pleading special damages under Rule 9G of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. So I want to know, you know, do we really have, and counsel for the other side certainly should address this as well, do we have a judgment here that's final enough for us to review it? Because if you are still sort of open to pleading special damages and the district court isn't really finished with it, maybe it shouldn't be here.
I mean the per quad.
The per quad, yeah. I mean, this I will tell you, in my view, goes to a question of appellate jurisdiction. So as to that, it doesn't really matter if you talked about per quad in your opening brief or if you didn't or whatever you may have done. If it wasn't really a final dismissal at the district court level and the statute of limitations hasn't run yet and so on, I'm not saying I think any of those is true or not true, but those are questions in my mind. And I want to know whether by now, you know, any of these special damages that you foresaw at the time you were trying to prevent the release have begun to happen, or whether if you had an opportunity to plead,
yes,
you'd be able to say so.
Can I say them?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had several problems. We've had many mothers come to us saying, we didn't know y'all got paid to coach. We thought you were volunteers. 3 weeks ago, we have a police report, thrown through the Little League van window. Never happened before. At a coach's meeting 2 weeks ago at Outfield Park, we had a bottle thrown through the window. Never happened before. People associate us with this film. A week doesn't go by where somebody doesn't call me or come up to me and says, I saw your movie. A movie in which the coaches sing songs of the boys about sex up with other little girls, drink and gamble, get paid to coach, endanger the children. One scene that was not in the book, that only happened to me, that Mr. Coyle was aware of, is in the morning I get a phone call about one of my players who was killed, shot dead. In the obituary, I'm listed as next of kin. I am called in the morning. The scene happens in this movie, but it wasn't in the book. It only happened to me, and Coyle was aware of it. And I speak at the funeral, and that's how that movie closes. There's just so many similarities between me and this character, Judge, along with the defamation. If they had just stuck with the book, it would be different, but they insisted on defaming us throughout and shooting it geographically right in our neighborhood. Brian Robbins said he wanted it to be in the real place. They weren't out of any of the scenes without massive security, Judge, and we're out there all the time without any security. So we're already endangered. I have several of the coaches here today, some of the best human beings you've ever met, are now in harm's way because Hollywood wanted to make a movie based on the real place. The district court on the real true story. The district court erred in that they thought there was a disclaimer on this film. There are no disclaimers in any advertisements for this film. The only disclaimer is 2 minutes and 30 seconds after the film ends to an empty theater. Throughout it, it's marketed as based on a true story.
But of course, the district court looked to Illinois law on this and said, if it's possible to see this as someone other than you, not if it's necessary to see it as someone other than you, but just if it's possible, then the so-called innocent construction rule, which I know you're aware of and you've discussed, applies. This is on the per se side, not in the per quad side. And your opponents place a great deal of weight on that as well, since obviously there are differences. I know you say they're all the unflattering ones, but there are differences, and Illinois courts are pretty strict with defamation suits.
We think, if I could just read it. Two sentences from Bryson, which we think carries the day on this. Under the circumstances, we conclude that the plaintiff should be allowed the opportunity to prove that despite the fictional label, and this doesn't even have a fictional label, the character Bryson bears such a close resemblance to the plaintiff that reasonable persons would understand that the character was actually intended to portray the plaintiff. A reasonable person might see an Associated Press article that says Keanu Reeves plays Bob Mazakowski. This is an Associated Press article. We didn't encourage them to write. They wrote that. Keanu Reeves. This is in many video stores. The movie is based on a true story about a loser who relates to other losers and helps them because he understands them. I don't understand how anyone conceive of the similarities of the league named after African tribes, a book in which I'm mentioned innumerable times. The author of the book gets paid a large sum of money for the movie rights, without ever mentioning anything to me. And the key scenes in the book involve my life. And they just defame us throughout. Throughout the movie, he lies about being in the securities business. I'm in the securities business. My business is way down. And my main fear, though, Judge, is the threat. When we were in California, Judge Morrow said it was a real threat to the safety of our coaches. Right now, I just want to paint this picture for us, for you. Western and Van Buren, you guys are Chicago people. The Rockwell Gardens homes. We pull up. Some of the buildings are red and gold. Those are the vice lords. Some of the buildings are blue and black. That's the gang's disciples. After 12 years, the gangbangers high-five the Little League coaches. Now, there's a movie out there where the coaches abuse the kids, don't care about them, don't even know their names, are getting paid to coach, and say it's about community service, dickhead. It's really horrifying. This was an R changed to a PG-13. So the theme running here is that no good deed would go unpunished. And I really think that our coaches are at risk out there.
Sir, if I may ask you a question about the appendix of your reply brief. On page 21, you have a picture here, and I gather it's an advertisement for this movie, and it ends, based on a true story, comma, this movie shows how, etc. Who wrote this?
This is, I guess, the name of the corporation would be, it's a video production, it's Video News. But somebody in Video News thinks it's based on a true story. The lead actor, the book that became the film, was a great journey because you see the fallibility of the system. This is the lead actor in the film. You see corporate America throwing money out of situations, everybody looks like they're doing their best, and they get the benefits. They're talking about us. So this is the lead actor. Brian Robbins said, I knew it as a movie. I knew it as a book before it was a movie. In the depositions, we'll prove if you let us have our day in court, and I want to have time for rebuttal. In the depositions, we'll prove that even the actors and actresses and film crew thought it was based on a true story, and it's just too close. So I'm going to leave time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Kowski. We'll hear now from Ms. Berman.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'd like to start with Judge Wood's question about jurisdiction, because I know the appellate court always wants to know if it has jurisdiction. In the ruling on the motion to dismiss, when Mr. Nizakowski was still represented by Mayor Brown and Platt, during that hearing, Judge Kokoris told Mr. Nizakowski that he was dismissing without prejudice and could replead, and Mr. Nizakowski stated on the record with his counsel there, while he was still represented, that they are going to appeal and he would not amend the complaint. For example, in our supplemental appendix on page 7, which is part of the transcript from the ruling on the motion to dismiss, Mr. Nizakowski said we're going to appeal several times. And so, therefore, I believe that it is a final judgment at this point, because Mr. Nizakowski made it very clear that he was not going to replead. And as a result of his representations with his counsel during that ruling, Judge Kokoris then entered a final judgment. I believe that this court does have jurisdiction over this case.
So your argument has to be that he waived the right to replead? I mean, he could say, I want to appeal, and it's, you know, whether he has an appealable, people file appeals all the time that we decide shouldn't have been filed yet, so simply to say he's going to appeal. But if your argument is that that was tantamount to saying that he was also going to forego the opportunity to replead, that might be different.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe from the context of the transcript, it's clear that he chose to stand on his complaint and that he did not want to replead despite the invitation and encouragement from Judge Kokoris. You know, he said, I'm not dismissing with prejudice, you can replead. His lawyer was standing there. It was an informed decision with counsel, and he chose to stand on his complaint and appeal as opposed to replead. And the special damages that Mr. Nizakowski has, or the alleged special damages that Mr. Nizakowski has mentioned during his argument for the first time this morning, even if they were in the complaint, don't satisfy the special damages requirement under Rule 9G or the Illinois authorities. It's
well,
not financial
law. Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, though. When you file a complaint initially to enjoin the release of a movie or a book or anything else, obviously you will not have incurred your special damages yet because it's pre-publication, and special damages by definition can't begin to accrue until publication. So there needs to be some way of transforming the case or amending the case, or maybe it's a brand new cause of action for all I know, although I suspect you'd be here arguing res judicata if you tried again. So there needs, I'm a little concerned with the way this may be falling between the cracks, because if indeed, as he said this morning, he's lost clients as a result of that, that strikes me as something that plausibly would count.
Your Honor, during the briefing on the motion to dismiss, in essence, Mr. Mizakowski did amend his complaint by including additional facts which were not in an original complaint in his opposition, a supplemental opposition to the motion to dismiss. Judge Picourt considered those allegations, even though they were not in the complaint, in deciding whether Mr. Mizakowski had sufficiently pled special damages. And at the time of the motion to dismiss, the movie had been out, gone, not in the movie theaters anymore, and Mr. Mizakowski made that informed decision to stand on what he had. And didn't state at that hearing anything that he had additional special damages. His argument, he stood on his arguments, and you know, at this point, you know, I believe that he's waived it, not only in the district court by choosing to stand on his complaint, but then he didn't even address it in his opening brief, and the case law in this circuit is very clear that you need to raise every argument you have, and he waited until his reply brief to raise that issue. And also, to follow on your questions about the innocent construction rule, if you look at your Honor's decision in Pope, which is a Seventh Circuit 1996 decision, which is very consistent with all the Illinois authority, it's clear, as your Honor said, that the defendants only need to show that there is an reasonable construction. We don't have to prove it's the only reasonable construction. The defendants are not required to show that no one could think this is about Mr. Mizakowski, that someone could reasonably believe that it's not about Mr. Mizakowski, which is consistent with every Illinois Supreme Court authority, including Bryson. If you look at Bryson, it adopts Chasky verbatim, which sets out the very same standard and the burdens of proof.
Of course, Bryson is, I think, a troublesome case for you, because the things that you have really hung your hat on, it seems to me, are things like the fact that in Bryson, there's the same surname, and in this instance, it turns into Connor O'Neill as opposed to Mr. Mizakowski. But Bryson is much more an all-the-circumstances kind of case. You know, I'm sure we can all imagine situations where you could replicate someone's life completely and just put a different name on it, you know, born in the same town as you were, you know, went to the same school, went to the same college, went to the same law school, worked for Jenner and Block, and so on and so on, and at some point everybody would know, well, that's you, you know, that's Debbie Berman, even if it was called Jane Jones. So, you know, Bryson, I think, is more factually subtle than you have suggested.
If I address that, Your Honor. First, Bryson is clearly inapposite, because in Bryson, the court said there are a whole line of cases, the Barry Harlem case, the Schaefer cases, that line where it says if you're not mentioned by name, it's not of and concerning you, which is a different argument than the reasonable construction. There are several hurdles that the plaintiff must meet in a per se case, because it's an extreme remedy. You're giving the plaintiff presumed damages, which is quite an exception to Illinois tort law. And because of that, there are very stringent requirements. And if you can't meet them, it doesn't mean that you have no cause of action. It means you need to plead and prove special damages and the other requirements for per quad, but it means you're not entitled to presumed damages under per se. It says, with respect to instances where the person is not named, we are not addressing those cases, and this is not that case. And it specifically cites Barry Harlem, which is, in my opinion, dispositive of Mr. Mizakowski's case. In Barry Harlem, the institution, and it's similar to the Schaefer case as well, was not named in the broadcast. Instead, the institution had to say, we're the only person that they could be referring to. And the Illinois court said, that is not sufficient. You have to rely on extrinsic facts to show that you are the only person, and because of that, you cannot meet the of and concerning requirement, which is the first requirement that you must meet for the per se clause of action. So Bryson on its face is an apposite. And then when you look at Bryson on the innocent construction, Bryson is applying just the same rule. Did you look at the totality of the circumstances, which is exactly what Justice Gorsuch did. He looked at all the similarities, all the differences, everything that Mr. Musikowski put, and he said, based on that, a reasonable person could find that it's not you. This is not the case where the movie said the current sitting president of the United States. You have to be named on your face, as, which Bryson doesn't address. It says we're not addressing
those types of cases. I'm not sure that that is the law in Illinois, that you actually have to be named, you know, this is so-and-so. If you are absolutely identifiable, there was some movie made, you know, about the woman who was the first female judge on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and they decided to name her Jane Jones, that she was born and fled from the Holocaust and did all sorts of other things. Everybody would know that was Ilana Rovner. It just, that's who it is.
Correct, Your Honor. I was going to say you have to be named on its face, or there has to be absolutely no doubt that it's you.
Right.
And that would mean that you're, I just didn't get that clause of my
sentence.
That's okay.
Apologize.
For example, my example of the current president of the United States, you don't have to say George Bush. It's clear that you're referring to him. But here, there is no, there's nothing that has been shown that the, there's no doubt that this movie is about Mr. Musikowski. To the contrary, Judge Kokoris rightfully found that based on the differences, it might, and also the genre of the movie, it's a Hollywood movie. There's no dispute. It's very clear in the complaint that it's a Hollywood movie. Also, the story is not Mr. Musikowski's story. It's based on a true story. That's correct. But then it was adapted for Hollywood, and as the complaint clearly alleges, it is a story of redemption of sort of a down-and-out individual who's forced to coach a baseball league, a team, so that he can repay a debt, and by interacting with the children, he finds redemption. That's not Mr. Musikowski's story. There's no character named Robert. There's no character named Musikowski. There's no Little League mentioned. There's no pictures of Mr. Musikowski. And for the names, it really relies on a lot of extrinsic facts for someone to think that Connor O'Neill is Robert Musikowski. It's not like the name in the movie is Richard Wojciechowski. I understand that Mr. Musikowski will say that he has an Irish background, but that relies on a lot of extrinsic facts. And if you look at his complaint, the way that he establishes that it's him, he doesn't say on the face of the movie, everyone knows that it's me, which he has to do to defeat the innocent construction rule.
Are you sure he hasn't said that? I mean, actually, a lot of the things that you're arguing about are facts, and I take it your position is all of these facts are for the district court to determine as a matter of its own decision-making, not to go to a jury.
No, Your Honor, the innocent construction is an issue of law to be decided by the court.
Right, a factual issue of law, if you will, I mean, like many of them are.
Well, Your Honor, we're taking all the facts in Mr. Musikowski's complaint as true. We're not adding any additional facts. We're saying based on what he said, it's an issue of law, and the reason Illinois courts make this an issue of law is because of the presumed damages. They want to get cases where people are seeking presumed damages, where they haven't met the requirements out early, and it's consistent with other things. The issue is whether a reasonable audience would conclude that this is about Mr. Musikowski. And if you look at, for example, paragraph 68 of this complaint, it's quintessential of how he tries to weave a whole bunch of outside sources, which is not permitted for a per se cause of action. Per se is, on its face, it is so damaging to this person, and you know it's this person, that they can get presumed damages. Paragraph 68 says, the book Hardball talks about Mr. Musikowski, and the reviews of the book mention Mr. Musikowski. And
the AP article does.
And because the movie is based on the book, it has to be about me.
Well, and also the AP article.
The AP article, if I could address that, that article it's still extrinsic facts, and it was written the year 2000 before the movie ever came out. So it's clearly not from the face of the movie, of what was shown to audiences, what was actually published, that that person knew that it was Robert Musikowski. It's impossible. It happened before that the movie ever came out. And how that individual determined that it was Robert Musikowski is not clear from the face of the article or any of Mr. Musikowski's attachment, and he very well relied on the same extrinsic facts that Mr. Musikowski wants to rely on. And if he has to rely on extrinsic facts, he cannot maintain a cause of action for defamation per se under Illinois law because of the threat of presumed damages. The law is very clear, and it says that any doubts go in favor of the defendant because of the harsh punishment of presumed damages. And therefore, if the defendant is able to show any reasonable construction, then you cannot maintain a per se cause of action. Your remedy is per quad, and Mr. Musikowski chose not to pursue that. He stood on his complaint, which is sufficient.
It seems like the logic of your position is there really could never be a per se action if there's a person in the United States who doesn't know you, because that person wouldn't associate you with the movie.
No, Your Honor. The problem here is Mr. Musikowski is not named in the moving. Because he's not named, he has to overcome an additional hurdle, which is a very high hurdle because, of, as I've said, per se is, gives you presumed damages. And because of that, Illinois court states you have to know on the face of it that it's you. If he was named in it, it would be a different lawsuit. You said Bryson and many other lawsuits. But because he's not named, he has an additional hurdle. And that hurdle is there for a good reason and a thoughtful reason that the Illinois courts have put there because of the, this incredible remedy of presumed damages. He can still maintain a cause of action for per quad. But the issue is not whether nobody could know you. He, a large part of why his cause of action fails is because he is not named. And Bryson makes that clear. You know, a name goes a long way to showing that it's, that a reasonable interpretation that it's you. You can look at these other factors, but if you're not named, it's a long way for showing that it reasonably could be somebody else or nobody at all, especially when you consider the genre of the movie, which is fiction. This is a Hollywood movie. It has Hollywood actors. It is based or inspired on a book, but many Hollywood movies, you know, and it's clear, for example, as the Ninth Circuit said, people are so used to these types of movies now, even docudramas, which are sort of the intermediate ground between documentaries, which are 100% factual, and fictional movies, that they don't believe that everything that they're seeing when they go to the movie theater is factual or would be about a real person.
Unfortunately, that may go both ways, in that a shocking number of people think that the things that they saw in the movies were, in fact, the facts. Ask any kid about Mozart's life, and they'll probably recite Amadeus facts to you. But anyway, we don't need to discuss Hollywood's reputation.
Could you speak for a moment about paragraph 126 of the complaint? And this is the one the district court had trouble with respect to its adequacy on the per quad damages. Why isn't that sufficient?
The cases make clear that, and it must be financial injury, but you have to explain why these statements, what individuals, what customers that you lost, for example, the Stelson case is very illustrative on this matter. He didn't indicate what amount of money he then said 40%, but as Judge Forth explained, didn't say what he was doing. He never has said in any of his pleadings that any customer said that they would not continue to deal with him. And if Mr. Musikowski has lost a substantial amount of time and effort because he's been preparing exhibits and doing the briefs, that's not the kind of financial loss that the special damages are designed to address. But this paragraph does not indicate that he has, that customers have told him that they would stop dealing with him, and he needs to identify who those people are, that they said, I saw the movie, the stuff I saw, and I can't believe that you would do that, and that's you, you won't do it, and I'm not going to deal with you anymore. Special damage is a very high burden. It's not notice pleading. It's a Rule 9 pleading. It's a heightened standard, and the reason for that is to also weed out additional defamation cases where you can't prove the special damage. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Berman. Sir, you have 3 minutes.
First of all, I am a sitting coach and a sitting president of the Near West Little League, and I do have 7 kids, and for the first time, a bottle came flying through the window at a coach's meeting. And people every week ask me about the movie. Did you have a gambling problem? Did you drink, et cetera? This was never marketed as fiction. The lead actress of the film thinks it's a true story. We agree, this is from Bryson, we agree with the general proposition that where a libelous article does not name the plaintiff, it should appear on the face of the complaint that persons other than the plaintiff and the defendant must have reasonably understood that the article, that the movie in this case, was about the plaintiff and the allegedly liable expression related to her in the Bryson case, him in my case. Again, Associated Press. The story based on the book Hardball by Daniel Coyle is about playing and coaching Little League baseball and the violence of Chicago's Cabrini-Green housing project. Reeves plays Bob Musikowski, former addict turned devout Christian who coaches a Little League baseball team. I will, before a jury, have 500 people walk up here thinking that was me. Paramount and their attorneys have distorted this and are saying that was everybody knows it's fiction. Across the screen after that bar fight scene where he's in jail, it says, based on the book by Daniel Coyle. Daniel Coyle's book opens, everything that happened in here is true. the movie is gone, but if you go in any video store, there's a wall of 40 of them up there, and that's who watches. It's $2 or $3, and the guys in Rockwell Gardens and Henry Horner Homes are going to watch that movie and then come out just as we pull up at 10:30 at night. What has to happen for you to give us our day in court, respectfully? Bryson is clear on this. All the cases that were cited after that were pre-Bryson that she cited. Other films were cited at session. Here's one of the quotes from the defendant, one of the odd cases, Luke Lemmy, that they used. All fiction, by definition, eschews an obligation to be faithful to historical truth. Therefore, where fiction is a medium, it is meaningless to charge that the author knew his work was false. Here's what the says. Therefore, where fiction is a medium, as alleged by appellant in this case, and as evidence in the film titled A Romantic Fiction. Are you allowed to do that? Put ... and leave something like that out? That was a fictional film, and they put ... It is meaningless to charge that the author knew his work was false. The author didn't think his work was false. Brian Robbins chose to shoot this film in my neighborhood. Judges, there's 1,000 other neighborhoods. So you don't think all our neighbors think this is our movie? They say it to me every day. And in the movie, we abuse the children and don't care about them and are out there for their own merits. They take scenes that only happened in my life that weren't in Coyle's book. You know,
would you have no case here if the movie had been shot in L.A. or something?
Yes, we would. We might not have a case if it was shot in L.A. That's correct. We shot in my block, some of it.
So that's the most important thing.
That's an important thing. That's not the most important. The most important thing is Bryson saying that you don't have to be named to be liable. You can't imagine that those are coincidence. A man who got in a bar fight, cut his hand, coaches an inner-city little league where the teams are named after tribes. I mean, there's no other one like it, Judge. Please protect the citizens and my fellow coaches and I.
Thank you, sir. My thanks to both parties, and the case will be taken under advisement.